If you're a baby boomer, or maybe someone who's helping to take care of a boomer, the next hour is for you. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. You're a boomer if you were born between 1946 and 1964. And for many, many years, we heard about how the boomers were going to change everything, and I mean everything, and leave the world in great shape for future generations. But that's an issue for another program. For this program, let's talk about the optimism that surrounded the boomers. It was everywhere for a while. The question that's out there is, what happened? Reports indicate high numbers of depression, self-medication with alcohol and drugs, both legal and non-legal, and there are reports of increased suicide rates. So we want to find out, are these reports accurate? And if so, why and what can be done about it? Let's start our discussion today by talking with Dr. Wisdom Powell. Dr. Powell is a psychological scientist and director of the Health Disparities Institute at UConn Health. She's a chair of the American Psychiatric Association's Working Group on Health Disparities in Boys and Men. And Dr. Powell has testified before a congressional briefing on men's mental health. Dr. Powell, welcome. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Are the reports accurate?
So I would say that it's difficult to pin down a lot of precision around these estimates because, generally speaking, when we estimate depression at a population level, we're taking those data from across a number of studies in different contexts. But I would say, yes, that most studies consistently show this trend with baby boomers reporting more depression and anxiety and increased suicide when compared to younger cohorts.
Okay, so that leads to the next question. Why?
Well, I think it's important first to talk about what depression is and what it isn't. Depression is a mood disorder that can manifest in a variety of symptoms. And we should also note that the World Health Organization cites depression as the leading cause of worldwide disability. So that's for individuals across all age groups. And in the mental health field, when we talk about depression, we're usually using terms like major depressive disorder or clinical depression, right? So that set of disorders and conditions can manifest in different ways by individual. But what we typically see when we see depression or when it shows up are like persistent feelings of sadness, irritability, sleep disturbance, changes in appetite and weight, a lack of energy. You might even see unexplained physical pain, difficulty concentrating, you know, the typical sort of suite of symptoms. But I think that when we talk about the presentations of and symptoms of depression in older adults, we often can confuse those with the signs of normal aging. And it makes it a little bit more difficult or challenging to detect and intervene upon. Sometimes in later life, depression can manifest like as memory difficulties and a marked change in the desire to socialize. But what's more important is that the symptoms of depression can be missed in older adults because they can co-occur with medical conditions like diabetes and heart disease. So with that sort of foundation in mind, when we talk about baby boomers, we're really talking about the children of the members of the so-called silent generation, right? Mm-hmm. We're described as working hard and keeping quiet. And this sort of family exposure and context perhaps had implications for the ways that baby boomers were taught to deal with emotional problems. Many may have been reluctant, for example, to open up about emotional problems because of societal and family expectations that they should be strong, stoic, and silent. So we might be seeing this uptick in depression simply be as an artifact of that sort of exposure and expectation around coping with one's problems. But there are likely to be also other determining factors.
Sure. Yeah. Just to put it in context, I'm at the tail end of the boomer generation. So when you're talking about our parents, I understand that completely. And we were taught by them, don't complain, don't say anything. This is part of life. And I'm not depressed. I'm simply getting older.
Right. That's right.
Please, go ahead.
No, I was saying that's right. And, you know, that kind of messaging, when received, can have implications for help seeking. So we can see often, you know, a reluctance to go in and describe, you know, the symptoms that you're experiencing, or to tell someone that you might be in emotional distress in this generation. But there also may be sort of just a lack of comfort and familiarity with describing what's happening in your interior life among baby boomers. We also know, at least some data suggests, that baby boomers may be also more resistant to treatment for depression, and they sometimes describe this as treatment resistant depression. And what we do know is that baby boomers often fall into that category. And when we talk about treatment resistant depression, we're talking about depression that doesn't respond adequately to medication that's taken in the right dose, in the right combination, and at the right time. And so we do see that presentation among baby boomers at a higher rate.
So do you mean antidepressants, maybe in combination with some sort of therapy, does not do the job for them?
It means, and so you're right, it means a medication, typically antidepressants, sometimes anti-anxiety medication, taken in combination, but taken at the right dosage and over the right amount of specified time. So it means, as you alluded to, that often the treatment, the course of treatment for baby boomers has to be a combination of, you know, the right medication at the right time combined with therapy. And for a variety of reasons, taking the right medication at the right time may be complicated for older adults because of memory decline that's associated with normative aging, and sometimes just resistance to taking medication for mental health problems.
From some of the articles I was reading the other day, it appears that many of the boomers are self-medicating with alcohol or with drugs like marijuana or with even prescription medication.
Yes, and so there are some data to suggest that there are a significant sort of under-detected, under-treated and untreated substance abuse and behavioral health issues in the baby boomer generation. So you're right to point to that particular array of symptoms and perhaps coping strategies that might be leveraged more often by this cohort.
I'm still trying to understand why the boomers might be different. I mean, what's at the root of this? I have read some articles in trying to prepare for our program. One, the fact that the boomers didn't maybe expect to live as long as they're living. And that, honestly, makes them feel better, but can also depress them. Another is, as you get older, the economic strain on the family, the health concerns, or, you know, maybe just, look, I didn't accomplish in my life what I thought I was going to accomplish, and that depresses me. What is it that's doing this?
I think you have outlined some really significant possibilities for why we might be seeing more depression in baby boomers. But as you have underscored in your comments, this is a wicked problem, right? We don't really know exactly, you know, why this uptick is occurring. There are some hypotheses. Some of them have already been stated by you, and that is sort of the sense of strain that this generation has felt around being both caretakers of their parents and also taking care of their children, and having the added both socio-emotional and financial strain that's associated with being wedged in between those two sets of responsibilities. And then folks have talked a lot about, you know, sort of the rapid social changes that were happening in the time that baby boomers were coming of age, and the sense of first elation and accomplishment with sort of moving us along a continuum of civil rights, but then also experiencing the sort of the letdown, right, that happened as a result of bearing witness to, like, sort of some stalls in some of the gains, societal gains that many of the baby boomers set in motion. But again, all of this is just signals to us that there are probably multiple reasons for this uptick in depression that warrant further scientific and clinical investigation.
Dr. Paul, we only have about a minute or so before we have to take a break, and I'd like to ask you to stick around and just talk with us for a few more minutes after the break. But I'm curious as to the breakdown between men and women for the boomers. Is there a big difference between them in terms of the rates of depression?
So we know that in general, and on a population level, women are more likely to be diagnosed with depression and are more likely to report depressive symptoms than men. And that gender difference extends into older adulthood, where we still see that gender divide. But we also still see a similar divide with respect to suicide completion, where we see across age groups, men being more likely to complete suicide than women. And that also happens in older adulthood.
Dr. Powell, what about African-American men and men of color? Do they have any, for the boomers that is, any unique issues?
So I would just say that there hasn't been as far as I've been able to glean, a consistent study of African American baby boomers from which to draw broad conclusions. But I can talk about what we know across a number of population studies that have been conducted among older African Americans. And so we know that there's some variation in the estimates of depression in this group, but some of the estimates that I've seen place the prevalence of what we call clinically significant symptoms somewhere between 5 to 13% in our what we call community samples, those who are like sort of people who are outside of health systems, and then 6 to 33% in the so-called clinical samples. But what I want to say is that African Americans who were born during the baby boomer period were also facing significant social shifts, right? The civil rights movement, the Cold War, all the things that were being experienced by the larger population, but they also had the added sort of layer of exposure to sort of life course racial discrimination. We have a consistent correlation between exposure to racial discrimination and depressive symptoms. What this probably means is that among African Americans who were baby boomers, that they are now sort of dealing with the cumulative effects of the exposure to those environmental stressors over, a period of time. And if you add to that what we talked about earlier, being the children of the so-called silent generation, that being strong, stoic, and silent in the face of persistent social barriers like discrimination can produce wear and tear on this particular cohort. Now, I want to also point out that even though we see this uptick in depression among baby boomers and African American older adults, we do know some things that have been cited to improve those outcomes or to sort of offset the depression in this population. And many African Americans who were born during that period and who are now aging are finding great solace and a sense of protection from social support networks, from their churches, from their family members. So that if anything, gives us some silver lining in that can underscore, some of the data that we observe.
Dr. Paul, one last question for you, please. You have said a few times, and I agree with you completely, that this generation was taught by the previous generation, don't complain, don't reach out, don't ask for help. How do you reach those men and women of the boomer generation who obviously need some assistance?
Well, I think the first thing we can do is create a culture of of sharing and among that generation, or we try to reestablish that culture of sharing. Actually, I think we all need that, because I think that there's still quite a bit of stigma around seeking help for mental health problems that existed for everyone. But I think we have to also be willing to dig beneath the surface when we're presented with older adults in clinical practice or in clinical settings, that when they're talking about physical pain or feeling like they don't want to socialize as much as they used to, we have to be willing to consider that maybe those aren't the signs of normal aging, right? That maybe those are a sign that perhaps this individual needs more questions to be asked about symptoms of depression, because we can miss them as they co-occur with all of these other health conditions. I think that we also have to think tools and the assessments we use for detecting depression across different age groups, and particularly for older adults, given the mixed symptom presentation that I described. We need definitely better tools to assess depression in this population, and we need narrative change. Seeking help for mental health problems has to be viewed as a sign of strength and as an opportunity to be around and available and functioning for your family. I think those kinds of messages are likely to resonate with baby boomers who have placed a significant priority on caring for those that they love.
Dr. Wisdom Powell, psychological scientist, director of the Health Disparities Institute at UConn Health. Dr. Powell, thank you. It was wonderful speaking with you, and I hope you come back again in the future.
Thank you so much.
And we spoke with Dr. Powell a little bit earlier today, and we're back live now. We're continuing our discussion about the mental health of the baby boom generation. That is, those born between 1946 and 1964. And I'd like to bring in two more guests now. Dr. Shane Owens is Assistant Director of Campus Mental Health Services at Farmingdale State College. Dr. Owens is with us on the phone. And it's always good to welcome back to the microphone Dr. Jeffrey Dietz, Assistant Professor at the Frank Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University. And Dr. Dietz has his own psychiatry practice in Fairfield, Connecticut. Dr. Owens, Dr. Dietz, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
It's good to be here.
Pleasure to be here.
And to see you. Dr. Dietz, are the boomers unique? Are they suffering more from depression than other generations?
It's very interesting. We've got a combination of factors going. I think this was mentioned by Dr. Powell, that is, and you as well, mm-hmm. in terms of being silent and not speaking up. So it's hard to get a real handle on incidence and prevalence when you have a population samples. That's how we determine rates. We go door to door. We can't go to doctor's offices and see what your rates are. So they're population samples that are done by NIH and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. But they depend on people's self-reports and maybe some other reports about their symptoms. So if you're looking at an uptick in something like suicide, which is what we're talking about, or something like substance abuse, one would want to make the correlation. However, in the absence of having really solid data, it's hard to make exact correlations. So one might assume that incidence and prevalence rates are underreported and that they may be going up, but we need to develop better measures in order to reach people and to get good figures.
Are you treating more boomers in your practice?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Are they, is this mostly for depression?
Yes. Some with anxiety, but almost all the anxious ones have depression mixed right in with it.
Are many self-medicating?
Absolutely. Probably without doubt, the biggest self-medication is, I like to say it's dispensed by bartenders and liquor stores. It's certainly not dispensed by doctors. And self-medication for anxiety, depression, and sleep disorder that's associated with depression is rampant and growing.
The age group of those who are coming to you for counseling, for treatment, people in their 60s, 70s?
I'm starting to see older people. By the way, that gets into an interesting question. Dr. Powell raised the question of older adults. When I teach, I like to say that people that are older are people that are 30 years older than me. However, I don't know that we have there's new jargon now, young, older adults, young adults that are older. So with such disparity in terms of how, it's not just that baby boomers are aging, it's how they are aging and what factors went into their previous development of physical and mental health. We have to be very careful to assess each individual. I'm here and I'm happy to talk about the generation, but we have to remember that we're still talking about individuals that are part of a large cohort.
One last question before I bring in Dr. Owens. We talk about self-medication, and you're saying it's mostly alcohol. Obviously, there is a push to legalize marijuana in Connecticut, and you live in Connecticut, but it's also being done in New York State. Do you find more boomers who use marijuana to self-medicate?
I find more marijuana being used to self-medicate across the board.
Doesn't matter the age group.
Well, in my practice, I'm finding it across the board. I guess I could say this. I'm finding that in, we'll call it older baby boomers, we'll say people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, they may be rediscovering and reusing marijuana at rates that they haven't used. So I'll find long gaps. And now that marijuana is more available, they'll be using it again and find that to, well, they'll use it for sleep. And they'll tell me they're using it for anxiety.
Dr. Owens, thank you for your patience. What impact are you seeing on the families of boomers?
Well, it might be a cyclical effect, actually. I was thinking about Dr. Powell earlier and what she was saying about the responsibilities of boomers. And boomers have responsibilities not only to themselves, but largely to their parents and their children and their grandchildren. If the school where my children attend is any indication, grandparents are main caregivers now. So they're taking care of basically three generations of people in addition to themselves. So,
and that's frightening. Doctor, I have to tell you, we did a program the other week about student loans and how much it costs to go to college nowadays. And if the grandparents are taking care of all these generations, the economic load is incredible.
It's absolutely tremendous. You know, you have your parents, and you're hoping that they put enough away for themselves from the silent generation to take care of themselves until the end of their life, and a lot of them did not. So you have them, then you have your children who have graduated college and then returned home, usually for some period of time before they leave again. Some of them are divorcing and moving back in with you, plus you have the grandchildren that you're taking care of. It's not only economic, but it's stressful as well.
Okay, Dr. Owens, I know I only have you for a few more moments. With the time that we have left, I'm going to put you and Dr. Dietz on. It's almost like putting you on the quick clock here. So if I'm a boomer and I'm listening to this program and I'm married to someone who may be struggling, what do I do? How do I get them the help that I know that they so desperately need? Dr. Dietz, I'd like to start with you, and then Dr. Owens, I'll bring you in.
Without question, I talk with them. I really talk with them about how they're doing, and I don't expect it to be a one-time thing. Hey, how are you? I heard something on the radio about depression. I'd like to talk to you, and I'll give you the questionnaire about how you're feeling. I think we're talking about what I'd call a conversation. Getting to know someone, expressing interest in how they're thinking and feeling, empathy. Being the best discussions I've ever had with people about their inner lives come in the context of an empathic discovery of each other. So I think that's the way to do it, expressing genuine concern about another person, how they're doing, how they're thinking, and how they're feeling. And recognizing that that won't necessarily be a one-time conversation is a really good way to go about it.
Dr. Owens.
I think the most important thing is that we respect the fact that boomers are largely individualist, especially the men in the boomer generation. But one of the things that all men of the boomer generation are used to is going to neighbors and either borrowing a drill or borrowing a lawnmower. They should take the same tack with getting help from each other. Walk over to your neighbor, talk to them, say, listen, are you dealing with this? Because this is happening in my life. And I hear these conversations happen between boomers quite a bit, but they don't quite go that extra mile. There's a discomfort that they get to when there's a certain level of intimacy, but we need to go across that line and make getting mental health help like asking for a lawnmower.
I have to tell you some funny stories. It's I have friends who are roughly the same age as me or a little bit older, but I'm always amazed at how the conversations many times will be on the surface. But then if you start talking about something a little bit deeper, because you're both talking about empathy, how many of us will simply say, you know what, I've been through that. I'm going through that. I understand exactly what you're going through. But it takes one person to actually say, I'm experiencing this, and then kind of everybody joins in.
Right. And that's common among the boomer generation. They helped one another. They looked out for one another. They were the generation that was going to change everything, and they stuck together in a certain way. And now as they become more afraid, they really need to go back to sticking together and looking out for one another.
Hmm. And I'd like to say one thing about that, too. One of the biggest public health support groups is called NAMI, National Association for Mental Illness. Illness.
Right.
Who wants to think of themselves as ill? Why not the National Association for Mental Health? Everybody's got a brain, everybody's got a mind, and people need to be aware of their health. I would certainly, in addition to seeing public service announcements and advertisements about your financial health, I'd sure like to see public awareness of mental health issues. Destigmatization takes a while. It doesn't happen overnight. Now, this may seem like a bit of a jump, but medicines for ED, erectile dysfunction, they became available, 10, 15 years ago? And finally, over time, the conversation shifted to understanding that this was a normal event that would happen in aging or male aging. Mm-hmm. I believe we're talking about the same thing. I would certainly like to see public awareness of let's be aware of saving for your mental health days, how you're going to retire in a mentally healthy way. So, of course, we recognize that there's illness, but in destigmatizing illness and in understanding how to get people together, I think that's going to encourage association and decrease of social isolation.
So it sounds like you'd be in favor of mental health days also, taking a little time off from work and all that. I mean, we don't have to come in on Monday now?
I don't know about that, but why not mental hair instead of Mental Health Awareness Day or Mental Health Awareness Month? Why not Mental Health Awareness Period? Just like smoking awareness. You don't put no smoking signs on for one day. I guess we used to have smoke outs. Mm-hmm. But people understand that smoking is a public health risk.
Dr. Owens, I have 30, 45 seconds left with you. Final thoughts, please.
Really, across the board, it's very important that we take the course of mental health as opposed to mental illness and just make it a part of our normal conversations. We're seeing it in elementary schools and middle schools and high schools in New York. They just passed laws that require this kind of talk in class. And I'm hopeful that it just becomes part of the curriculum. From a time that a child goes to elementary school, they should be talking about how this knowledge and learning will affect their health overall and how mental health will be part of that. And it's really up to the boomers who are now the grandparents of these children to talk about that with their kids and model for them appropriate behavior by getting the help that they need.
Dr. Shane Owen, psychologist, assistant director of campus mental health services at Farmingdale State College. Thank you, Dr. Owens. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's The Full Story on WSHU. One last break. We'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Robiak. Thanks for being with us. We're doing a show today pretty much aimed at the boomer generation. but also, as the doctor was saying just a few moments ago, it spans multiple generations, because if you're a boomer, sometimes you're taking care of their kids, they're taking care of their kids, and everyone gets affected by depression. We've done programs in the past where some have talked about alcohol abuse and alcoholism and drug abuse, and they say it's not just that person who's addicted. Everyone becomes involved. And I believe it's the same thing that we're talking about today for the boomers and depression and self-medication and potential suicides. So we're covering just so many different facets of this conversation today. And we're continuing to talk with Dr. Jeffrey Dietz, who's assistant professor at the Frank Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University. He has his own practice in Fairfield. We're also going to bring in two other guests. Dr. Diane Kramer is marriage counselor at the Long Island Center for Divorce Mediation. And also Nora Duncan, who has been with us before, who is the state director for AARP in Connecticut. Dr. Kramer, Nora, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. I made it sound like Dr. Kramer, and that's because she was unfortunately called away. My name is Fred Clarer.
I knew that because I just looked up and they just put it on the screen for me, and I apologize. How are you, Fred?
No problem at all. Diane and I are interchangeable.
And that's a topic for another show.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Fred, for being with us. Dr. Dietz, I want to continue with you for just one second, because some of the boomers, even though they're happy to be alive, they maybe didn't take into account all the things that come into lasting longer than our parents did. How does all this play into what we're talking about?
It's a very important question. As baby boomers get older, remember, they were the beneficiaries of earlier treatment for blood pressure, for diabetes, et cetera. So they're living longer. However, that means they're taking more medication, and they may have residual symptoms that other generations before them didn't live long enough to get.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they could have physical infirmities that would otherwise have done them in. They would have had heart disease that would otherwise have done them in. So they're living with greater degrees of medicine taking and disability. Now, that's a real challenge. If you haven't been prepared or haven't really thought about what life would be like, so let's say if you were a runner or a tennis player, and now you're older and you have arthritis and you can't do your exercise, think about the impact that could have on both your socialization, that's an interpersonal thing with your buddies that you're playing your golf or your tennis with, as well as what it does to your mind, because you don't get those lovely endorphins running around that make you feel good,
mm-hmm.
and then you're socially isolated. So people, I think, need to be prepared to do self-maintenance or maintenance and try to be flexible. I think flexibility and resilience and preparation for that is every bit as important as preparing for your financial retirement.
Fred, thank you again for joining us and for filling in for Dr. Kramer. We appreciate your time today. What are you seeing in terms of the boomers, the baby boom generation, and divorces? Are the rates up? Are you seeing more problems in terms of depression or, as we've been talking about, self-medication?
Yes, I think that whether the rates are up or not, I suspect they are. I haven't really done any kind of analysis. But we see a lot of people, couples who are, I mean, I'm a baby boomer myself, so the people, my contemporaries, are maybe a little younger. And I think they come in a couple of varieties. One is you have people who have just simply lost touch with each other and sometimes with themselves and with the marriage. And they focus on the children and the house and the, and everything. And then when suddenly the kids are going off to school and have their own lives, they find themselves.
They have to talk to each other?
Well, I'm sure you know this better than I, but the real issue is communication. These people don't communicate with each other. They replace that communication with things to do, with taking kids, care of kids and houses and so forth. And then when suddenly there's just the two of them there, they don't really know how to deal with each other, and they often don't know how to deal with themselves. That's where you get these self-medication issues, where people turn to substances rather than internal, introspection and relationship with your spouse. And this is really crucial.
I think that's a fair point, because one of the things that it's probably a good thing is that the boomer generation did get involved with their children. We certainly did. We were involved in their lessons, taking them to camp. I mean, think about all the socialization that took place in and around the care of the children, and now they're off to school. And I think it's a shock and an adjustment period, especially for spouses who may not have developed their own sense of self while they were so involved with children. Now it's a real challenge to reintegrate with your partner and develop in ways that are health promoting as the two of you age.
Hmm.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. That's exactly what I see as a divorce lawyer. You know, when people come to me, somebody's already over the edge, and it's going to end the marriage. But almost invariably, what's happened is they've become strangers. Sometimes they hate each other. Sometimes they're just sort of indifferent. Sometimes they still care about each other, but they want a life that makes sense to them, and it doesn't include the other person. And that's very unfortunate.
I'd like to bring in one more voice now, because this kind of fits into what we're talking about for divorce, especially when it comes to economics. Nora Duncan is the state director for AARP in Connecticut, and Nora has been nice enough to join us in the past. Nora, it's good to speak with you again.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
So when we're talking about the boomers and we're talking about economics, what are you concerned about? What message would you like to get out?
Well, there's not a thing that any of your guests have said. I've been listening for the whole show. That isn't something that AARP, you know, fails to recognize or doesn't have a resource for. We're kind of the Google for age 50 and up, if you go to AARP.org. And, you know, if you have a problem, you're not alone, right? If there's a lot of people out there, AARP, I'm not even talking about the entire boomer generation or the entire 50-plus population, but we have 38 million members. Their lifestyle, their economic situation, their health, I mean, it's as variable as 38 million people can be. But, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at just my AARP Connecticut webpage, and the first few stories that I pull up are about is your adult child sending you to the poorhouse, by a guest blogger. Planning for retirement now could have a big impact on your financial future later. And then, you know, balancing work and caring for a loved one, or how to find new employment. I think my bottom line takeaway from everything I've heard today is that, yes, these are all real problems, but there's also resources, opportunity. We have everything that you can think of, from saving to retirement for this generation and the next, to tuition discounts so people can go back to school, to, if you are divorced, you know, tips and tools for looking out for romance scams. And then if you're not divorced and maybe you're having that same issue with reconnecting with your spouse, travel tips, fitness programs you can do together. So I want to kind of just take a minute to focus on the positive and the opportunity that's out there, regardless of where you're sitting personally in a situation, and whether you're the boomer who might be facing these issues, or you're the friend or loved one of a boomer who might be facing these issues. You know, the finance aspect of it is tough. I did one simple search of our website alone, and, you know, it came up with baby boomers have a tendency to spend more on non-essentials than their other generation counterparts. You know, there are, you know, 19% of boomers, according to Bankrate, have higher credit card debt than they do savings. And some, 15%, have no credit card debt, but no savings at all.
Hmm.
And then while most boomers are done paying for their own college debt, a lot of them have taken on the responsibility of their children's college debt. Again, all things you guys have mentioned, but there are resources and tools available, and I would love for people to check them out. You know, they're in your neighborhood, they're online, they're AARP Connecticut, they're AARP New York, they're AARP Massachusetts, and then, of course, this is free. 99% of what I'm talking about is free to anyone, no matter what their age is or their membership in AARP.
Fred, Clara, I'd like to bring you back in just for a moment to talk about the economics in terms of divorce. Are you seeing a lot of boomers coming in because I don't know any other way to put it, because they don't know how to handle money? Their finances are messed up.
Absolutely. That's actually the single biggest issue in divorce. the basic causality, people think it's affairs and so forth. And these are obviously issues. But from my experience, and I've been doing this a very long time, the overriding issue is economics. People who spend more than they make, or are unrealistic about budgets, or are unrealistic, for instance, about paying for children to go to school when they can't afford to do it. And I would say that I think one of the biggest problems that I see as people come to me is that either they have unrealistic expectations about what they can do for their children, or one of the spouses has not been an economic producer at all over the years. And obviously, when you have small children, that has to make some sense, like children need two parents. But boomer parents who are coming to me to be divorced, one of those spouses has been their earner, the other is not, and is now in a terrible situation of having no career, no skills, and no experience. Mm. And I would urge people to think through these issues and to become at least at some level financially capable if you have to be on your own. That to me is probably the overriding issue. I think Nora put her finger right on it.
Ron, I'd love to tell you, especially that, you know, even as close as Trumbull, Connecticut on Tuesday, you know, talking about this, how you refocus your life, maybe looking at a new career, older age, how you format your resume, what your online digital profile needs to look like. In Trumbull, Connecticut on Tuesday, I'm hosting a free seminar at the library in the evening. That's the kind of thing we invite people to come out to so that they can, you know, take little bits of information, process them, and help them apply them to their life so they get to exactly where the other guests are talking about. You know, grabbing a hold of your situation and being able to have tools that can help you do something about it.
That's Trumbull Library Tuesday evening, and what time will that be?
I think we start at 7, but their right. Trumbull Library has it on their website, and I'd love to see people there.
It's right up the road from us. Dr. Dietz, we only have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to ask the three of you to kind of give us your final thoughts at this time. Dr. Dietz?
Just a word to back and forth with Dr. Duncan. It's very interesting, the R in AARP. That term was coined how long ago? Because I'm not 100% sure when that organization was formed.
Well, actually, we're on our 60th year right now. And one thing we have not been, the American Association of Retired Persons, in quite some time legally. And that's because more than a third of our members are still working.
Mm.
So actually, AARP stands for, the R stands for real, and the P stands for possibilities. So it's AARP Real Possibilities, no matter where you are in your living, working, retiring, aging lifestyle.
I'm so glad to hear that because I try to counsel people that they have more than one career or the possibility of more than one career. And while they're winding down one, they might be looking to develop others. There's an issue that I've found with boomers. It's a boomer issue. And that is, if you've expected and you've advanced throughout the course of your life and achieved a place of significance in your place of work, whether you got disengorged by the Great Recession of 2008 or for other reasons it was time for retirement, if one wants to go and learn something new, you're going to take a step back financially and move to a less remunerative situation while you learn. That's kind of like what doctors had to do when we did internships and residencies. We didn't get paid well, but we learned. And I'd like people to understand the concept that going back to learning, if you expect only to get the salary that you made before, you're going to be in a very difficult situation. Whereas if you can open your mind to going back, maybe starting, getting paid a little bit less, and learning and getting experience in a new subject, I think mentally you'll be more resilient and able to succeed.
Hmm. Fred Clara from the Long Island Center for Divorce Mediation. What advice can you give to boomers to say, you know what, this is what you should need to do, otherwise you are going to be coming to my center?
If they want to avoid divorce, I can tell you frankly, and I learned this from my partner and my wife, Diane Kramer, Dr. Di. She's really brilliant at this. you have to really communicate with each other and with yourself every single day. You don't go to bed angry or upset or thinking about something you didn't say. Deal with each other with honesty and respect and with yourself in the same way. If you start from there, the rest of it will work out and you will never see me. People need to just take responsibility for themselves. It's really not that complicated. And it's very easy to put your children first, put your house first, put your spouse's career first. And those are important things. But in the final analysis, the children grow up and they're going to live their own lives. And you have to be prepared to live your own life, whether it's as a partner in a marriage or that didn't work, you go out on your own. It's the same issue. You have to really take responsibility for yourself. And that's the message I would give to anybody.
I remember a therapist saying to me years ago on one of the programs, she said, take care of yourself first, because if you don't, you're not going to be able to help others. You won't be able to help your kids, your spouse, any family members. Take care of yourself. Get smart. Get healthy. And then you can do a better job. Nora Duncan, final words from you as state director for AA Real Possibilities Connecticut.
Thank you. I love what you guys all just said, right, about taking responsibility. It's about perspective. You know, I want people to be empowered to choose how they live as they age. So come volunteer with us. You're going to meet 150 awesome other people fully engaged in their community. Meet new people. Come to one of our seminars. Join us at the Beardsley Zoo for a free day at the zoo. You know, there's movies, there's events, there's online interactions. There are resources for caregivers. There's things that can really help you engage. I mean, get out there, enjoy your community. It's not the answer to everybody's problems, but if you're starting to feel disengaged, we have ways to help people be reengaged at all levels, whether it's through our local offerings at nonprofits for, you know, discounts, or whether it's the college tuition scholarships. We have at two universities here in Connecticut that can save you thousands of dollars to go back to school and re-career. AARP.org/CT. I'd love to hear from people, and I'd, you know, our events and our latest updates are there. So come out and engage with us. You know, spring has sprung. It's time to get out of the house.
Dr. Dietz, 20 seconds.
Dr. Duncan, can I see?
She's actually not a doctor, but it's okay. Nora Duncan.
I'll take it.
Okay. Can we see, please, a 15 second spot during the Super Bowl for you?
You know, we were in the playoffs running up. I don't think Super Bowl money might have been too much.
Nora Duncan, not a doctor, but the state director for AARP Connecticut. Fred Clara, he's married to Dr. Diane Kramer, and they run the Long Island Center for Divorce Mediation. And Dr. Jeffrey Dietz, assistant professor at the Frank Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac, and has his own practice in Fairfield. Thank you all. It was a pleasure. It's the full story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.